So, Rishirvachasatramuktam kintrihava ikena manasodha vishrambham anavastanasya shata kirata eva sangachate. So you can repeat. Rishi Uvacha. Shukadeva Goswami said, Satyam, the correct thing. Uktam, have said. Kintu, but. Iha, in this material world. Va, either. Eke, some. Na, not. Manasaha, of the mind. Adha, directly. Vishrambham, faithful. Anavastanasya, being unsteady. Shata, very cunning. Kirataha, a hunter. Eva, like. Sangachante, become. Translation, Srila Shukadeva Goswami replied, my dear king, you have spoken correctly. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's action. So you can repeat. Srila Shukadeva Goswami replied, my dear king, you have spoken correctly. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they are always vigilant and watch the mind's action. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, text 5, Lord Krishna says, Yajna dana tapa karma na chajam karyame vatat Yajna danam tapaschaiva pavanani manishinam. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up, but should be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. Even one who has renounced the world and has taken sannyas should not renounce chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Renunciation does not mean that one has to renounce Sankirtan Yajna. Similarly, one should not renounce charity or tapasya. The yoga system for control of the mind and senses must be strictly followed. Lord Ashvadev showed how severe types of tapasya could be performed, and he set an example for all others. So, Om Gana Timadanda Shah, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur, Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, reading this particular verse reminds me of an incident that occurred in Las Vegas, I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago. Normally, I don't talk about Las Vegas. But what happened is that you had magician who, as part of his act, he had a tiger on the stage. Maybe you read about this. And, the tiger behaved himself most of the time. But this one time, the tiger actually dragged the guy off stage. Somehow or other he injured him. And everyone else was thinking this is part of the act. You read about that? They thought, oh, this is part of the act. Well, it's really fantastic. He's really done a good job, having a tiger drag him off the stage. So The reason I was reminded of this particular incident is it's like the mind. Because the mind is like that tiger that can drag us off stage. Off stage means out of Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean we're, as Shakespeare said, all the world's a player and everyone's an actor on the stage. In one sense, that's true, actually. But off stage means out of Krishna consciousness. So we were speaking about this yesterday, how one has to become very, very alert. And here it says in the purport that, let me see, where is that? In the translation. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's action, which is really an interesting statement. In other words, you're just always conscious of what this mind starts to contemplate or think about, whether it's a sense object, whether it's anger, or anything like that. So a devotee has to always be conscious of that. Okay, so that's one point here. So what do we do if we see someone who is not doing that? This is another question. Who's not always remaining vigilant and watching the mind's action, or at least apparently not always doing that. Because there's two types of people who may not be doing that. One type is the absolute pure devotee, and the other type is the conditioned soul who is attempting or was attempting to be Krishna conscious. So, as far as the conditioned soul is concerned, let's take that person first. You know, how do we deal with them when they see that they're not remaining attentive? That's the most difficult thing. Because, what is that? Upadeshu himorkanam prakopaya nashantaye. If you give a foolish person good instructions, guess what happens? They get angry at you. So how do you give instructions to someone? You basically can't. You have to set a good example. That's the point. You know, you set an example, and not only of austerity and controlling the mind and regulation, because what does it mean? What is the practical manifestation of controlling the mind? It's regulation. That someone is predictable. You know, you can set your, as they say, you can set your watch by someone. You know, regulated, you can set your watch. So that's the external manifestation. Okay, so you set an example doing that. And not only you do that, because if you just do that and you're miserable, it's not a good example. You know, we've seen in the past, devotees have been very, very strict in setting a good example in the sadhana, but they're, you know, angry and they're bitter and they're miserable. So what kind of example is that? Then you set the example. I mean, like in the past, like in some of the Gurukulas that were in ISKCON, you had the teachers who were just like real nasty, had good sadhana and everything like that. And then, you know, the kids were thinking, I don't want to be like that. Because really, the way to teach people, the way to inspire people is to have good role models. This is the most important thing. Just like nowadays, of course, people have the worst role models in society. Violence, as we've been speaking the last few days. If you watch any of these films, not any of them, some of them are half decent, like the Avatar. But if you see some of these films or the video games, I mean, all your role models are just like, or most of them, sorry, are most really obnoxious living entities. And as a result, people are following those role models. So the devotee has to be a good role model for others. Controlling his senses, happy in Krishna consciousness, compassionate, loving, empathic, and all those other wonderful things. And then people will follow. It's like we have Srila Prabhupada, and of course when I saw Srila Prabhupada, I thought, you know, I want to be like that. I don't want to be him, but I want to be like that. You know, someone who's compassionate, loving, dedicated, etc. So that's how we deal with a conditioned soul. We set a good example. Now, as far as how we deal with a liberated soul who is not, we have to be very careful, who is not apparently watching his mind. And I'll tell a story from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Because many people would not understand Lord Nityananda, who was the Avadhuta. And, you know, externally, he didn't follow the regulations of a sannyasi. He's apparently a sannyasi. And a sannyasi, as we mentioned the other day, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, should not wear fine clothing, should not eat opulent food. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited the perfect example of that. I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused to accept sandalwood oil. He refused to accept a bed. He refused to accept, and when he ate prasadam, he was simply refused to accept the opulent foodstuffs that were offered to him. He just took the boiled sabji and things like that. So, but then you have, on the other hand, you have the example of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda, of course, is not only a liberated soul, but he's the supreme soul. There's a difference, too. We're not Mayavadis. So Lord Nityananda, he wore jewelry. I mean, not only a little jewelry. He had a lot of jewelry. He had so much jewelry that people were planning on how to steal it from him. There's that story in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. How this person, he was a Brahmin, but he became a dacoit by bad association, and he was the head of all the dacoits. And they saw Lord Nityananda, and they thought, wow, now we're going to be fixed for life. You know, we're going to have enough money if we take all of his jewelry, sell it. And so what they did is they planned, and they waited outside of the house. I think it was Nandanacharya. They waited outside of the house, and then one day they fell asleep while they were waiting and counting the money in their minds. Sometimes it's like that. As I mentioned the other day, when my father passed away, I was thinking I was going to get an inheritance, and I was counting the money in my mind, and the money never manifested. That shows how that book, The Secret, is not actually true. Because if it was true, I would have plenty of money by now. Because I was actually visualizing it, spending it, enjoying, you know, the profit adoration distinction I would get from being the most charitable person in the Hare Krishna movement. And it didn't happen. So it doesn't work. Too bad. So I was lamenting. So anyway, so getting back to the story. So the thieves were enjoying in their minds, and while they were enjoying in their minds, they fell asleep. Yeah, that was the first night. And then, you know, of course, the second night, they saw all these Vaikuntha guards, you know, like 10 feet tall people chanting Hare Krishna with tilak on. And they also started to criticize Lord Nityananda. What kind of sannyasi is he? Wears jewelry, has guards. You know, what's wrong with him? And then the third night, of course, was the most interesting night that they... it started to rain, literally, cats and dogs. Not just figuratively. And the pus and mucus and everything was coming from the sky. And all the dacoits fell into the ditches around the house. And they were bitten by scorpions and snakes. And they became blinded. And finally, they took shelter of Lord Nityananda. So, anyway, so Lord Nityananda definitely didn't... He ate opulently. Dressed opulently, he eventually got married. And so a lot of people had difficulties understanding, you know, why isn't he controlling his mind? He's not acting properly as a sannyasi. You know, we're worried about his sannyas life. And so it's interesting. It's interesting. So there was one he was a very good devotee. He was a Brahmin. And this Brahmin was having some doubts. He was a devotee. You know, he wasn't an offensive personality. But he was always having doubts about Lord Nityananda, wearing jewelry, you know, dancing, associating with all these low-class, third-class shudras, or even less. Because Lord Nityananda is the most merciful, so he came to save the most fallen. And actually, in many cases, those who are in society considered most fallen are the fit recipients or more easily take to Krishna consciousness than those who are proud because of their material learning, their material opulence, or other things like that. As Jesus Christ said, it's as difficult for a rich man to go to heaven as a camel to pass through an eye of a needle. So it's, you know, because that attachment, Janmaishwari Yashutasha Shubir, we quoted that verse yesterday. So Lord Nityananda, generally, I mean, and also the low-class people, so-called low, they weren't low-class really, but low-class in society's estimation, were very happy to take to Krishna consciousness because basically they were rejected from society. Even the brahmanas wouldn't even talk to them. If they stepped on the shadow of a brahmana, practically there'd be a riot in the street. So in this way, Lord Nityananda was saving these people who were rejects of society. Actually, Prabhupada did the same thing. Prabhupada saved the people who are basically rejects. I mean, some of Prabhupada's best disciples, I mean, Prabhupada found in places that were just unimaginable, like nudist colonies. Imagine, you know, finding your disciple in a nudist colony, living in a tree, naked. And he is one of Prabhupada's most prominent personalities. Oh, just like that story we were reading the other day about the Vaishnava who found his chief disciple as a dead body floating in the Ganga. He just touched his feet to the body, and then the body came to life. And that was he became a great devotee. So, anyway, so getting back to the point is that Lord Nityananda. So this Brahmin, he was thinking all these negative thoughts in his mind. What is this? Ugh. You know, this Lord Nityananda. I mean, he didn't say anything. It wasn't offensive, but he was thinking things that could have come out as offenses later on. So then eventually he thought, you know, I got to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. This is bothering me. So he went to Jagannath Puri and he worshipped Lord Chaitanya, became very close with Lord Chaitanya. Every day we go to see Lord Chaitanya here in the holy names. One time it was the proper situation where he was alone with Lord Chaitanya and he just revealed his mind. He waited for the proper situation, and he said, "My dear Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, can I reveal my mind to you in confidence?" And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Yes, of course." He said, "I'm having some doubts about Lord Nityananda. supposedly he's in the renounced order of life, and he does this, and he does that, which I mentioned before. And, you know, what kind of devotee is he?" And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't yell at the guy. You know. He was very kind. He said, "Look, one who's on the transcendental platform, he's above the rules and regulations of the Vedic injunctions. He has no duty that he has to perform or do anything. I mean, even you see that Vamsidas Babaji would smoke sometimes. So, yeah, there's so many examples like that. I don't know if I should give them one I'm thinking about. Anyway, but who? Well, that was before he manifested his devotional activities. But this is we're talking about people who manifested devotional activities. Anyway, Prabhupada, I think, what was it? He would take this, what is it called again? For his health, you know, there was something like tobacco or something like that.
Snuff.
He would take snuff, that's right. He would take snuff. Now, for his health, you know, so sometimes people can do that. Thank you for that. I forgot it was snuff. So obviously we don't want the devotees imitating and Jagadguru taking snuff in the temple. So transcendental personalities can do these things for specific purposes. Like Lord Rishabhadev here, he's doing these things for specific purposes. You know, he's acting like a crazy person. So anyway, get back to the story of Lord Nityananda. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, he's the Lord Nityananda is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even, this is an interesting quote, that it's actually quite humorous. It's even if I see Lord Nityananda enter a liquor house, or if he marries a Muslim girl, you know, just the imagination of that happening, Lord Nityananda marrying a Muslim, then my faith in him will not be deterred. Actually, Lord Nityananda did a lot of wild things. I mean, even as a sannyasi, he would sit down on Srivastakura's wife's lap and drink breast milk from her malini. I mean, it's just like, imagine a sannyasi. You know, there's supposed to be a little separation between men and women in society. You know, imagine if one sannyasi in our movement would sit down in some lady's lap. Can you imagine that? It'd be all over Dundabuts. Or whatever, Chakra or some other website, right? So Lord Nityananda would, so Lord Chaitanya said that, and he said that you have to be very careful dealing with a great personality, not to find fault in a great personality. And then he gave the example of Lord Brahma. That when Lord Brahma was first starting out in the universe, he just got his job as the universal controller. At one point, he actually ran after his daughter, Vak. That story's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's pretty heavy. And there were the sons of Maricha, who criticized him. They actually said, "What is this nonsense?" And then what happened? Does anyone know what happened because of that? No, before that. Yeah, well, there are actually two births before that. One is they became the sons of Hiranyakashipu, and then they also became Kalanemi, the sons of Kalanemi. So there's actually two births, like as demons. And they were cursed by Hiranyakashipu to be killed by their father. And, of course, that father was Kamsa later on. Anyway, so they were actually killed. That was why they were killed within the prison house, because they had committed that offense against a great pure devotee. I mean, imagine. Of course, that doesn't excuse our activities. You know, don't criticize me or you for running after some lady. You know, we have to understand. You cannot imitate great personalities. I mean, like you have Lord Shiva, who runs around, you know, naked. Of course, he chants Hare Krishna the whole time. And he gets angry, destroys the whole universe. You don't want to run up to Lord Shiva and say, you know, control your anger, you know. or when the sacrifice, when he went up to Daksha's sacrifice and just devastated the whole thing, knocked out a bunch of people's teeth, took Daksha's head off. Interesting, isn't it? You see, calm down, Lord Shiva. It's just your wife. You can get another one. You know, you don't want to do that. So anyway, we have to be very careful about criticizing Vaishnavas. That's the point, because they're very, very dear to Krishna. I mean, if one criticizes an advanced Vaishnava or any Vaishnava, then you actually lose your taste for hearing and chanting. So, anyway, getting back to the story, so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told the Brahmin that story, and then the Brahmin understood he had made a mistake by criticizing Lord Nityananda, and he immediately ran to back to Navadvip, and he found Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda was engaged in his Sankirtan, preaching of Krishna consciousness, and he went up to Lord Nityananda and revealed his mind. Because that's the way you overcome the effects of an offense against Vaishnavas. You know, other times Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would... There was that one story of the Gopal Chapala who offended Srivas Thakur by putting the ingredients for Durga worship outside of Srivas Thakur's door to try to frame him, you know, like a sting operation or something like that. And as a result, he got leprosy. And when he went to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and begged for forgiveness, Lord Chaitanya just got angry with him and said, "He actually, it's so interesting what it says in the Chaitanya Bhagavad. He said that your suffering hasn't even begun. You know, the guy had leprosy. You know, basically his nose had fallen off and his fingers had shrunk up. And he said, I said, your suffering has not begun. The real suffering is going to happen after you leave this body with Yamaraj. And then he described something like 8 million types of sufferings, several million types of punishments that Yamaraj has. We read about a few of them in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a few of these types of punishments. But then there's actually millions more. There's personalized punishments for everybody. It's just like when you go and buy a suit. At least in the old days, you didn't just go to Walmart and buy a suit. My mother used to take me to a tailor, and he'd measure me and then make the suit from scratch. You ever see someone do that? Mm-hmm. So Yamaraj does that. He measures you, and he makes your punishment from scratch. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you're going to be like practically infinitely engaged in being punished because of your offenses against Srivas Thakur. Of course, ultimately, that person got forgiven by Srivas Thakur, and he rectified himself. So in the same way, this Brahmin went to Lord Nityananda, begged for forgiveness, and Lord Nityananda embraced him, being the most merciful, and he became an associate of Lord Nityananda from that point forward. So there's a happy ending to that story, which is nice to have stories with happy endings. So the point is that we have to be careful not to criticize Vaishnavas who don't appear to be controlling their minds. So we have to be very, very cautious in dealing. Cautious in dealing with neophyte Vaishnavas because they'll get angry and it won't help them advance in devotional service. And cautious in dealing with advanced Vaishnavas. So this is the point I was making in class. So any questions or comments about these things? Yeah.
The Goswamis, Rupa Goswami or somebody says that there's two types of steadiness. There's steadiness in sadhana and steadiness in Vaishnava quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the two, steadiness in sadhana is more important.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, and why is that?
Why is that? Because from that, if you don't have steadiness in sadhana, then you aren't going to be steady in Vaishnava qualities. It's the cause of all the other types of steadiness. Nishta. Actually, this is also described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhurya Kadambini. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur obviously is following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. And he says exactly what you said, that there's sadhana, steadiness, and then everything else during the rest of the day. It's actually, Vishwanath explains it like the rest of the day, basically. Not only in dealing with Vaishnavas, but whatever you do during the day, you know, the steadiness. In other words, not even getting angry at your computer. You understand? That's true. I mean, I was thinking about that the other day when I got angry at my bicycle. I got angry at my bicycle because the chain, I couldn't figure out how to put the chain on and kept slipping off. My hands kept getting dirty. And anyway, I won't say what I say. It's not for polite class. But anyway, I said, stupid bicycle. And I was thinking, boy, I have to become steady in my dealings with my bicycle even. So that's the point. 24 hours a day, that nishtha should manifest. But that comes from good sadhana. Yeah, good sadhana is the most important thing because everything else comes. But of course, if one has good sadhana and one offends Vaishnavas, then that's a different thing. That negates the effects of good sadhana if you're offending Vaishnavas. Yeah, your question?
How do you deal with devotees sometimes with their own insecurities? You know, they just trying to find fault in somebody if you don't have fault. It's like to put the other person down.
We should, if it depends on who they are. I mean, if they're disciples, then you instruct them directly. It depends on how much they're able to take, how much direct instruction they're able to take, or if you're able to give them indirect instruction by being compassionate or empathic with them. I mean, sometimes people are finding fault with others just because they're feeling insecure themselves, because they have certain needs. They need to be appreciated. So it's a question of some discrimination. But we have to warn people, because I've seen that when people find fault in others, generally their sadhana starts to get weaker and weaker and weaker. And it just happens. I mean, they lose their taste for devotional service. They lose their taste for hearing and chanting. You don't see them so much at the temple anymore. It's because of offenses against Vaishnavas. I mean, if one doesn't commit offenses against Vaishnavas, then one always has a taste, and it's just spontaneous that one wants to come and hear and chant with the devotees. So they're hurting themselves. That's the first point. We don't want to get angry with them in the sense that they're not obeying our instructions because of our own personal frustration. We want to try to instruct them out of a feeling of compassion. So if the instruction comes out of compassion rather than the attempt to control them, then it will be much more effective.
How about avoiding this?
Well, if someone is always committing offenses, you got to avoid them. I mean, even if someone is very materialistic, we're supposed to avoid them too. I mean, we can have an official relationship. You know, how are you? How are you doing? How are the little kitties doing? Not kitties, kittens. I don't know why people are so attached to kittens. You saw the thing I put on the board. They all think they're God.
How did you put that?
Yeah, I put that out there. Yeah. They all think they're God, you know. So we don't want people who are... We don't want animals that are impersonalist. At least dogs don't think they're God. They're obsequious. So, we should avoid. I mean, if people just really into their senses, then we have an official relationship with them, and that's their choice. Everybody makes a choice in life. We don't have to go around smashing people. We should offer Krishna consciousness. Set an example. Like how blissful you can become just by hearing and chanting and having good sadhana and reading Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and Radha and Krishna. I mean, we have so much nectar. There's so much nectar to offer. And then people are going elsewhere. I mean, it's very unfortunate. People do commit offenses. And that's usually why when people come to the movement, they have more of a taste than after 5 or 6 years of the movement, because before they come to the movement, they haven't committed offenses. And after you come to the movement, you commit offenses. That doesn't mean you shouldn't come to the movement. But it's a phenomenon that I've observed many, many times. The people become complacent, and then the offenses on chanting and offenses against Vaishnavas are being committed. And then it even becomes like your, how do they say it in French? Raison d'etre? I mean, that your whole purpose in life. Is that French? Raison d'etre. No, we have three Frenchies here, so people speak French. It becomes the whole reason to be. Yeah, reason to be, right? Raison d'etre? That means that... Yeah, that means that your whole purpose of being is to find fault. And then you publish books like Monkey on the Stick. Where, you know, it may actually have true things in it. But the point is, you know, why look for the dirt or the stool like a fly when there's so much honey there or so much nectar? So it just, and we see that many people just, they become so bitter that they dedicate their whole lives to that finding fault in Vaishnavas. And what is their taste for hearing and chanting more? They're just bitter. Or as they say in Spanish, agria, right?
How do you say bitter in Spanish? Agria? Ellos son muy agrias. That means they're very bitter. So, anyway, so that's a hint for us. So any questions, other questions or comments? Yes.
Well, what do you do if you try your best, but you just always fall short of a good standard you know that you should be? How does it not turn into future consciousness being like such a pressure because you just can't keep up?
Fall short of what standard exactly?
The standard that one should be, like, you know, that you can feel that in Krishna consciousness there's so many expectations and when you get older and you're not able to always be, you know, be who you used to be or be who you should be, and then devotional service sometimes can become like a pressure instead of...
No, I mean, not that you have to do so much externally like you used to do. That's a different thing. We're talking about sadhana. Sadhana means chanting good japa, rising early in the morning, except, you know, when you have a late night program. But devotees should, in general, try to take rest early, unless there's some preaching at night. If you take rest early, then naturally you get up, unless you have some physical problem. Unless someone calls you in the middle of the night, it's an emergency, my computer doesn't work, the internet's not working. I call it Jagat in the middle of the night, you know. My internet's not working. Get out of bed and fix it immediately. You know, unless there's some extenuating circumstance, there's really no reason why we can't take rest early, you know. Unless there's some service-related circumstance.
Or kids,
yeah. I mean, that's extenuating. The kids start throwing up in the middle of the night or whatever. You know, so I'm talking, there's always extenuating circumstances. But generally, if one doesn't have them, then sadhana can be performed. And it's so nectarian to wake up and chant. I mean, I enjoy very much getting up early and chanting my japa early in the morning. I mean, I got most of my japa done. I have maybe a round and a half left, and I'm happy. Then I can do any damn thing the rest of the day I want. That's what Prabhupada said, you know, when he was moving his japa beads down. He said, oh, now they're all finished. 16 rounds done. Now I can do any damn thing. What?